This morning you're getting a twofer. So you don't just get fabulous Father Eric, but you get Father, the newly minted Father Mendoza. So congratulations to Father Ian. I'm happy to see you up there. He's still, he doesn't love you enough to want to preach to. I gave him the opportunity. He said, no, he wants to prepare. So you're stuck with me today. So there's an expression that says context is everything. And I think that really applies to our first reading, because if you read it in a vacuum, like most things in the Bible, it really doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Elijah, the reading begins, at the mountain of God, Horeb, Elijah came to a cave where he took shelter. And the word of the Lord came to him. He said, go outside and stand on the mountain. The Lord will be passing by. And then the Lord sends these signs, fire and wind and earthquake and all these different tremendous signs. And normally you'd think, okay, well, it's kind of obvious. God must be in something spectacular. Now, what is the context? The context is the following. Elijah, 2 days ago, we read about probably one of the coolest scenes in the entire Bible. When Elijah challenged the 450 prophets of Baal and to a duel of sorts, he says, whichever one of us, we will both call on our gods, and whichever god responds wins. So they were, cutting themselves and dancing around and in a trance for like half a day, trying to call down fire from the heaven to burn this sacrifice. Of course, nothing happened. And then Elijah, and he's making fun of him the whole time. He's saying, hey, call louder, maybe he's asleep. So it's actually a very funny scene. And then Elijah effectively calls down fire from heaven. It didn't just burn the sacrifice, it actually blew away the rocks and the water and everything. It just like an atomic bomb came down. So the Israelites got it through their heads. Okay, I think we know which God we're supposed to be worshiping. That was a little bit of the context. That was part one. Now, what the reading mercifully did not tell us is the very next line is Elijah then cut the throats of all 450 of the prophets of Baal with a knife. So just assassinated all of the pagan priests or prophets, if you want. The next thing that happened was the queen, who was a pagan, got really angry and threatened. He says, I'm coming for you. By this time tomorrow, you will be dead. So he gets scared and he runs into the desert. Now, Mount Carmel, where this first sacrifice took place, is in the north of Israel on the Mediterranean. It's the northwest kind of corner. He, I don't know how, with the grace of God, tucks up his garment, runs all the way through the country of Israel into the desert, into Egypt, to Mount Horeb, which is also called Mount Sinai. So all the way back in Egypt, where the Ten Commandments arrived to the Israelite people, this was the place where the covenant was given to them. So it's a very significant spot. And God is telling Elijah, go to the place of the first covenant where I first spoke to your fathers, where I first entered into this relationship of life and love, where you became my people. Go to that spot and I will talk to you. And God appears to him in all the signs that previously at Sinai that he had previously appeared to Moses, earthquakes and fires and lightning and all these things. And God was not in those things. And this time around, it wasn't until there was this tiny whispering breeze that Elijah recognized the presence of God. So what is God saying from all of this? First of all, he's absolutely free to act however he wants. It's important that we understand that in our lives. Sometimes we always expect God to respond to us with spectacular, great emotions, signs, speaking in tongues, charisms, gifts, all kinds of stuff. Those are gifts for the church. Just like when Elijah called down fire from heaven and blew away, the rocks and everything, and there was a spectacular visible sign, that was a sign for everybody else. Elijah was already holy. In a certain sense, he didn't need that sign. That was a sign so he could reach out and communicate to the people of Israel who had lost their way. But in Elijah's life, he was already somebody who was committed to God. And God, a lot of times in our lives, it is not a bad sign when God stops giving us candy, when he stops giving us all the emotions, when it feels like he's not so present, when, you know, we no longer are receiving all these signs and whatever that he may give us at earlier stages, is not necessarily a bad sign when things get quiet. It may just mean that God is starting to treat you in the spiritual life like an adult who can operate by faith, hope, and charity, who will be faithful to him even when it is hard, even when it requires dry faith. I always seem to pull out Mother Teresa for one example or another, but you know, when Mother Teresa of Calcutta died, everyone presumed that she received regularly consolations, inspirations, visions, whatever, just because in order to do what she was doing, you're thinking, well, there's got to be something feeding her. And then when she died and her spiritual diary was revealed, to the amazement of many, she went 50 straight years uninterrupted, except for one period kind of towards the beginning when she prayed to Pope Pius XII to find out if he was in heaven or not, and then she got, I think it was like 6 months of reprieve. But 50 straight years of the dark night of the soul, spiritual blackness. From an emotional perspective, the doubt that God even existed and that if he did exist, he wasn't very happy with her and she was going to go to hell. You know, she didn't believe that in faith, but that was kind of the sentiment. And she understood gradually what God is doing is allowing me to feel and to experience what the poorest of the poor are feeling, to be unloved, to be unlovable. That was not a sign that Mother Teresa was somehow less holy. It was a sign that she was growing in holiness. It was a tool that God was giving her to become a greater saint than any of us will even be able to understand. None of us, I think, unless I'm greatly mistaken looking out at all of you, none of us, I think, are going to really be able to understand that kind of desolation. I know I certainly don't, not experientially. And in that desolation, God was making it known, I am present. When everything else gets stripped away, I am still present. I will be faithful. I am with you. So my invitation is, if any of us start to feel that way, provided, now I'm preaching to the choir because you are all the guys who show up to Mass every day, so provided we are still putting out the effort, you're still going to Mass, you're still saying your prayers, you're still trying to live charitably and everything, when we start feeling that dryness and that sadness or whatever, don't get too worked up about it. God has not abandoned you. He is as present and frankly more present when things are difficult than he is when all the miracles and the emotional butterflies and everything seem to be happening around us. In the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.